I don't know if you remember when COVID started. I remember being at a team retreat with some of our people, and it was just some of the first news was starting out. And so we started by a fun game, and we just said, you know, what if you got put into lockdown for 2 weeks? What would you do with those 2 weeks? And so we all went around and said, well, I would do this, and I would do this, and I would do this. And it was kind of this hypothetical two-week period that might happen to us. And then we found by the end of it was right during the time when it broke. And by the end of that time, everyone was heading home as fast as they could to try to get home before things closed. And then it wasn't 2 weeks, it was 2 months. And I remember about 1 month into it, one of my coworkers said, I think this is going to last 2 years. And I went, yeah, right. No way is this going to last 2 years. And then, you know, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months. And I don't know if you were like me, we were always kind of pushing things off. Do we have to cancel that? Could we possibly plan that? Are we going to have to meet online for 2 months? Now it's 4 months, now it's 6 months. And now that we're coming out of it, maybe, I don't know if you feel like I do, like that was kind of a long, bad dream that I don't know exactly what to do with. And it affected us maybe in ways we didn't know. And now we need to shepherd, as leaders, we've had to shepherd through the pandemic, which has been a challenge. But now we have to shepherd our communities out of the pandemic, and that is also a huge challenge. What challenges can you expect? As you're coming into this next phase, what can you expect to find in a post-COVID community or a post-COVID organization? What are some of those? And there's a lot, but I think there's five that are really significant to me as I look at this. One of them is that weaknesses have been amplified by COVID. So COVID as a disease, if you've talked to somebody who's had it, or if you had it yourself, it will attack whatever's weak. So if you have a little infection in your ear, all of a sudden your ear will really hurt. If you've got a bad knee, now you can't walk on that knee. So it's a general malaise that also highlights any weakness that you have. And it's the same in communities and in churches. So if there was some weakness in relationships before COVID started, well, now it's really bad. And if there was some dysfunctional part of your organization, then it might have broken during that time. I remember I serve in a local church and also in an organization. In our local church, we had some tension in our elders, and the pastor wasn't doing great. And about 6 months into COVID, the pastor said, I'm done, and he left. And some of the tensions that were happening in our elders, well, we stopped being able to manage them. We were kind of managing them, but we just stopped. So things that are weak break, or they come to the surface. Several of our teams in our organization, we had one country team where the leadership team just wasn't working as well as it should. COVID came and they locked up. It became totally dysfunctional. And so the picture I have is it's kind of like you have a lake, and when the water level is high, there might be big obstacles in the water, stumps or trees or rocks, but you just kind of sail over them because the overall water level is high, you manage them. When the water level goes down, you actually begin to run into them and they break the boat and you can't handle them anymore. And so you've probably seen some weaknesses. Have you seen some weaknesses in your church or in your organization or in your own leadership? Like it's just highlighted. And one of the questions is, some of us have places where things have actually broken in those weak spots, and we need to try to figure out how to rebuild them. So the problems that were there before probably are worse if there were problems in your organization or in your church. Now here's a second. Leaders become lightning rods for general frustration. So think what happens in a storm. There's all this turbulence, these clouds going up and down, and this turbulence creates static electricity. And that electricity hangs in the air in a general way, and then at some point, it gets to be too much and it wants to discharge. It's just too much. It's all hanging out there in a general way. And where does it discharge? It discharges onto the highest point, which happened to be some of us. And what you'll find is it's just like the nation of Israel in the desert. They're tired, they're hungry, they're hot. What's wrong with Moses? There's something wrong with Moses, because otherwise we wouldn't be having all these problems. It's hard to sort out all the little problems, so I just find a big problem, and that's my leader, or our leaders, or our organization, or the entire church. It's the high point. Now, have any of you experienced this? And one of the things is I work with leaders is we've been shocked so many times in the last couple of years. It's been painful to be a leader of a team or an organization. I remember we headed into COVID with our team, and I started getting online and saying, hey, this is what's ahead, casting vision for the opportunities God could have still in this, and just really giving hope and all those kinds of things. And pretty soon I began hearing back, kind of around, I wouldn't hear directly, people saying, well, Dave doesn't really care about us. He's just trying to make us work harder, and he doesn't know our pain, and he doesn't really love us. He just cares about numbers. He just cares about the organization. And I'm going, wait, what? What the? Did you look? It's me. It's your friend. and these shock treatments were just so surprising, and sometimes they would come out of nowhere. Or I'd have a conversation with someone about a particular topic, and then all of a sudden they're just unloading on me in anger. Sometimes through Skype, or not Skype, but Zoom. Oh, it's painful. It's been painful to be a leader. I feel bad for all the government leaders during this time because you can't win. I mean, you will just get lightning rodded, shocked during this time. So I would say that there's a lot of wounded leaders out there who've just been shot. I just had a pastor friend of mine come and visit, dear friend. He and his wife to me are some of the best pastors in our whole region. Incredible pastor, incredible family. He just moved to one of the kind of key churches in our denomination. He moved there 3 months before COVID started. So you have a new pastor coming in, and then everything locks down. And wow, some things don't work. And he's trying to build relationships, but he's building relationships like this, right? Can't see anybody's fight, just looking on our eyes, and all of a sudden there's this, and then somebody quits. But why exactly did they quit? And then people start talking, and he came to me, and he looked like he'd just come out of a concentration camp or something. He was just wide-eyed, because it's like the whole church has turned against him. And there's all the problems in the church are because of this new guy. Because we didn't have these problems before the new guy got here. And so it must all be his fault. And now they're doing a vote about whether they should keep him. And the vote is basically, do you think he's doing a good job of leading? It was 2 years of COVID, people. It was hard to lead. And yet he and his wife are getting so many lightning attacks against him. They just look beat up. And there's a lot of beat up leaders out there. What we find is you're tired, they are tired, and the world is tired right now. So we're going to have to deal with that. Here's some statistics from really recently. In the World Health Organization said on March 2nd, the COVID-19 pandemic triggered a 25% increase in the prevalence of anxiety and depression worldwide. This is just very recent information. 25% increase in anxiety and depression. Another one was a study in Forbes in February 1st. They did a study of businesses, and they found out that employee engagement was high. In other words, they worked hard at staying engaged. But they said that the percentage of the work population reporting that they felt depressed quadrupled, four times the number of workers that said, I'm depressed. Another study recently found that 8 out of 10 people in Italy, so I don't know if anyone here is from Italy, you are, that's right, reported a need for psychological care. 8 out of 10. 8 out of 10 said, I need psychological care. In the Netherlands, over a third of the population reported anxiety. In a study in the United States, a study of people 18 to 35, 80% of the survey respondents reported significant depressive symptoms, while 61% reported moderate or severe anxiety. So you're hearing anxiety, depression, stress, and these are studies from a month ago or 2 months ago. This is post-COVID. So this is what we're dealing with. And so we've got these energy levels depleted, people who are down, they're stressed, they're depressed. That's what we're working with. Wow, what do we do with that? So here, we got to look. We're going to talk about what to do in a minute, but this can be kind of sobering. And do you feel that? Do you feel kind of energy level down? Like when you go to your team, let's go, let's take that mountain.
What mountain? Are there still mountains? I don't want to see any mountains.
And then here's the last one. Well, what worked before doesn't work the same anymore. So we think we've gone through COVID, and then we'll come back and let's restart what we did before. Well, you go to restart what you did before and you find, hey, that car doesn't run anymore. Or it doesn't run like it used to. People have lost their habits. There's things they used to do, and you know, habits help us do things in an easier way. I used to show up in church every Sunday. I used to go to the student meetings, and now for a year I haven't. Well, now I've got to overcome the inertia to build that habit again. And then the world is not the same. People don't think the same. We're not entering the same world after COVID. COVID has changed people, and it's changed our environment. And here's just a recent study that was done in the United States. I don't know if this has been done in Europe, but this might be representative. They talked about, this was done in March, so it's also not very old, 7 through 13. And they did a week-long stretch and said, don't forget the top one because that's about everyone in America, and that's different than here. But of all adults who typically attend church monthly, they typically attend church monthly, you can see in the total, 36% attended in person and watched online or on TV. So you can see a change of behavior. They attended in person, but part of their attendance was online. This is the amount that attended in person. This was only online. And this is the percentage of people who normally attend who didn't attend that entire month. Okay, so you follow it. Normally attend, but didn't attend. So what you have, if you put these two together, online and didn't attend, that's 23% of normal attending people weren't there. Now, some of them got online. Oh, I don't have to get dressed. This is wonderful. I just got online, or I just watched something on TV. But you do have a 1/4 of the people didn't come back. Now, you get that into, 30%. Yeah, down here is, yeah, I didn't get my 30%. Down here, when you get to evangelical, so this is where the 1/4 is, it's 18 and 7, so it's 25%. So either 25% or 33%, 1/3 or 1/4, they're not back yet. So now I wonder how that compares with Europe. And just my sense is, as I go around to churches, it's similar, like 1/3 to 1/4 of the people just haven't come back. They're just not back. Some of them are getting on and listening and are listening somewhere else, or they've just gone to an online environment, but they're not back physically present. And then you have about, 46% who have kind of a mixed diet now. They're there physically, but they're also enjoying that online experience. And maybe that's good, but maybe they've distanced themselves some from the local fellowship. Here's the big question for us that I want to talk about today. How do you capture the kingdom building opportunity hidden in each of these challenges? So part of leading out of COVID will be being honest and truthful about the challenges we're facing, not ignoring them, looking at them in the face, and then saying, what's the hidden kingdom building opportunity that's in that challenge? And if we look at a couple verses here, we'll just see that's what Scripture does over and over again. Is it looks honestly at what's happening. It doesn't ignore it. And then it just asks the question, what am I not seeing about what God's doing? So Romans 8:28, you know this. It says, and we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. All things, a pandemic, a war, work together for good for those who are called according to his purpose. And then he goes on and says, it makes us more like Christ. So there's a good that God's accomplishing. He's not surprised by these events. He goes, I had some great plans for Europe, and then COVID came along. Darn it. Had some wonderful plans for your church, and then this war in Ukraine, it interrupted it. So that's where we start as believers, is we say God's sovereignly in control. Then you can see that Matthew 13, and in your notes, that's 14. That's a mistake, so you have to correct that in your notes. Matthew 13:44, it says, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and covered up. And so there are treasures that are hidden that we have to find. So he, but when he found it, he said, "Oh wow, I can't believe there's a treasure in this field." So I wonder what's the treasure in the field of COVID for us, and how could we find it? That's that would be interesting to ask. And then here's one more, John 18:36, where Jesus is being questioned by Pilate, and he, you know, he's being delivered over. Pilate says, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation, the chief priests, have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting, that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. My kingdom is not from this world." But, so, obviously, our goal is not to fix everything around us, because there's God's kingdom that's not of this world, that's advancing even when it seems like things are going back. So I think we have to backwards. So we have to say, well, this tragedy that's happening to Jesus, he can see the kingdom advancement that's happening in the midst of it. So how can we kind of get above these dynamics without ignoring them and see that kingdom advancement? So that's kind of the place we start. And good leadership gets above the reality without denying the reality, and then discerns what's the kingdom agenda and the advancement that God wants to have. What's interesting is that people who, I said that in your, the intro, I said I'll show you some things from some recent studies. People who aren't believers and just talk about what helps in crisis come to the same conclusions. Now, they don't have the basis that we have as believers, but this is a very interesting chart that has been done by, I don't know if you can see all of it, but it's a training manual for human service workers in major disasters. So they've studied major disasters all around the world, and then they train people in, if, when you have a major disaster, here's kind of what you can expect the people to go through. So we had a major disaster called COVID, and they said that here's how it works. There's pre-crisis, there's warning, threat, and then there's this impact. So it's like when we're sitting around going, hey, people are starting to get sick, and then boom, there's this impact. And the first response to an impact is a honeymoon community cohesion. So all the Italians are singing on their balconies, and the rest of us are looking at that going, oh, that's so cool, those incredible Italians. We had some people in our church, several of our small group leaders said, let's meet every day. And their small group went online for an hour every single day. And they got together and they prayed for each other and they studied the word. And it was amazing. There's this community cohesion around this crisis that's just fabulous. So I don't know if any of you experienced that. Let's come together. Let's sing on the balconies. We'll make it. And then here it goes. You know, so wow, can we keep up this Zoom meeting every day? How long do I want to sing on the balcony? Well, a bunch of my relatives are dying. And you have this disillusionment fall way down here. And it starts to come up and there's a working through grief. Now, here is kind of the pre-crisis level. There's a working through grief like this of the loss. So you could be, you know, our church used to be this way, our organization used to be this way. And there's kind of trigger reactions. Oh, here we are and wow. Doesn't work anymore. And then it slowly comes up, and then there's a reimagine and construct a new normal that we hope is above this post-crisis future. So that's the classic response. Have you seen that? You know, you're working through grief, you're moving up, you're working forward. So that's just a classic response. But they also talk about how leaders impact that particular response. They say there is two other graphs that are impacted by leadership. Some leaders say, hey, things are good. And this is potential good news that pulls people up, but they really aren't through the rest of this yet, and it's overly optimistic. It's not really gonna work, and it pulls people up, and then they drop to their second disillusionment, and they'll often end up lower than they were before. Because they're double disillusioned. They're disillusioned by the first response and they're disillusioned by the great future someone paid in that wasn't able to be true. So there's that. Respond with overconfidence, failing to address psychological needs. God's good. He's working in this. Come on. We'll all be okay. Let's go. So we're not really addressing some of the things underneath it. But they said there's another kind of leadership that does this. They talk about responding with bounded optimism. So optimism, but it's realistic, it's bounded. And so you get this bounded optimism that is like this, and you'll see it keeps from the low and brings it up, and actually they'll end up higher than they were before the crisis. So they talk about how can you as leaders respond with bounded optimism. So it's appropriate, it's in context, which this kingdom of God perspective that doesn't deny what's going on will save them from the lows, and actually you end up in actually a better place when you're done. Okay, another interesting study, so now we're just talking about some of the research that's done around this, is research done by someone named Arthur Frank, and he did some research on narrative typologies. So his research was interesting because he would interview people who were terminally ill, and really they had an illness that was, they're not going to get over. And so he interviewed them about their terminal illness that they weren't going to get over, and had them tell the story, basically talk about what was going on. And then he was looking not for the specifics, but the kind of narrative they gave to their experience. Okay? And he said there were three kinds of narratives. One of them was the restitution narrative, which said, I'm going to get well, I'm going to get better, it's all going to get fixed, I'm going to get healed. But it was like, let's go backwards and reclaim what I got, this restitution narrative. The second narrative was the chaos narrative, which just was, I don't know what's going on, I'm lost, I don't know what to do, this is hopeless, I'm a victim, the chaos narrative. And then he had someone else that was the quest narrative. And that quest narrative was basically, the road of my life has taken a different turn than I thought. I won't be able to go down the other road, but I wonder what's down that road. I wonder what I'll find. I wonder how I'll grow. I wonder what I'll learn. And it was a quest for what was on a road that you didn't necessarily know before. And then he studied how that impacted their health. And there was a huge difference between the health of those who were on the quest narrative, because they were honest about the what they were facing, but they were looking, they were on a mission to find what was on that new path that they hadn't been on before. And I think that's what the kind of narrative we need to create. Like, we don't know all what's down this path. We don't know how it's going to all come together. But wow, isn't this an adventure to follow God through this difficult thing? Wonder what he's got in store. Wonder what he's going to teach us. And that frames all of the same facts in a different way, which basically would match Romans 8:28, would match that kingdom, that treasure in a field. So here we have some, they say to do this, but how do you have the basis for it unless you know Christ, for that quest narrative? So that would begin that bounded optimism. It's an optimism that just doesn't say everything's going to get fixed, everything's okay, but it does say this is what I'm expecting from God without denying what's there. So let's go back to those different weaknesses and say, what would that kingdom building opportunity be? How would I look at the same thing and see the treasure in the field that actually would be realistic? Treasure in the field is not that everything's great, we're going to be exactly the same size we were before, but what's the treasure in the field that would make it worth the quest, the adventure of pursuing what God has here? So here's weaknesses. Oh, when weaknesses are highlighted, they can be healed and made strong. Some companies will take things they build and they'll stress test them. Stress test them. They'll put stress on them to the point of breaking, and they'll go, oh good, it broke. Why do they want to break the thing they built? So they can find the weak part and strengthen it. And so if there's places in your church that are breaking, if there are places in relationship that are breaking, if there are places in your organization that are breaking, you can say, we just had a stress test. Now we know where it breaks. And we can focus attention on strengthening it so that, because that's a weak spot. Or sometimes there are chronic weaknesses that you ignore, and now you can't ignore them anymore. So you have to give them attention, that broken relationship. You have to give attention because it's broken. It's not working anymore. In the long run, it could result in you actually being stronger. And so this is actually what we find in Hebrews 12:7-13. He says, endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. what son is not disciplined by his father? And he says, our earthly fathers discipline us for a short time, but our heavenly father disciplines us for our own good. He stress tests us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. And then it goes on and says, therefore strengthen your feeble limbs, your feeble knees. And he says, make levels paths for your feet, so that the lame are not disabled, but rather healed. And so how do we, these things break, how do we work so that's not a disabling breaking, but a healing breaking, so we actually begin to address this. So we've been facing this on our, we had one particular team, our international team, that when we went into COVID, it just kind of fell apart. Everybody started fighting, and everyone started criticizing each other. Bad attitudes. We actually lost one or two people out of the team. It just went south. And then we backed up and we went, you know what? It was our team that served all the other teams. And because of that, no one was serving them. And also we were realizing that we were getting, it's also a team that travels a lot. The individual members travel a lot. And we weren't working on building community among them. So we had low community, we had low cohesion, low care. COVID came in, it all broke. And one of our staff guys went, it's my responsibility to fix this. And so he turned in and gave a lot of attention in the last year to shoring that up. Times together, eating together, sharing testimonies, caring for, and he individual conversation with everyone. He talked with every single one of them and said, tell me the problems on this team. This was actually painful, hard work. But coming out of COVID, it's one of our strongest teams. So the team that was weakest going into COVID is now one of the strongest because we actually had to give it attention and it's been healed. And sometimes a broken bone will be stronger in the place that it's healed than it was before. So this is a great opportunity. So as you watch things break, go, oh, we found the weak spot. Let's give it attention and strengthen it. When you run into a problem, you can go, oh, now we see that problem. It was under the water. We were ignoring it. Now we can't ignore it anymore. What do we do about it? And it ends up being, it can be a great opportunity. On our leadership team, I have about five guys that I work with. And then we went into COVID. I started having constant tension with one of my staff members. We would just, all the time, it would end up in this, and I'd get off frustrated and he would get off frustrated. And I backed up and I went, you know, I don't really have a friendship with this man. Like, we've worked together for a while, but he's very capable and incompetent, doesn't seem to be particularly needy. And so I invested in other relationships. I didn't invest much in my relationship with him. I went, I've got to back up. The stress testing is breaking our relationship. How do I strengthen it? And so I said, what are you doing next week on Thursday morning? Let's climb a mountain together. And we spent the whole morning climbing a mountain because we could do that and not be socially distanced. So this is a time of wearing masks, but when we were climbing the mountain, we didn't have to. And we climbed Lisa Hora, which is not very far away from here, and then went back down. And I spent several half and almost full days with no agenda, just building my friendship with this man. It broke. So how do I heal it? And now there's an entirely different resource in our relationship, and we're working together in really different ways. So one of the questions for us as leaders is, are we moving towards the problems? Are we seeing this as, oh, great, it broke. Now I know where it breaks. Now I know what we need to strengthen. Oh, I ran into that problem. Cool, now it's obvious that I don't have a friendship with this guy. We were sailing over it for a long time, but I got to stop and do something about it. Increased heat and pressure can purify and refine you as a leader. 2 Corinthians 12. He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so the power of Christ may rest on me. For the sake of Christ, then I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities, and COVID, and worldwide difficulty. For when I'm weak, then I'm strong. So how does God want to strengthen me by making me weak? That's a really interesting one. You know, how does he want to, like you were just saying, you have to learn then to be in control of, did you get it right there? Yeah, so control of your emotions, control your response, and it's going to bring stuff to the surface that you're going to have to deal with. So I told you about my coworker, and actually the way that it deteriorated was in the first couple months, we were having these Zoom meetings, and he would we would get into conflict, and I started getting really angry. And it was easier to be angry on Zoom than it was in person. And so several times I responded with, I was very irritated. I was angry at how he was responding. I confronted him about, in front of everyone on Zoom with quite a bit of emotion, which is painful for him. Everybody else, too, was watching and going, Dave, this is different than what we normally see in you. And I could say, well, yeah, that was an exception. It was on Zoom. We're all under pressure. Well, I have to say, I'm running into issues in my life that are always there. And I remember leaving that, and I was talking with one of my other coworkers, and I said, well, the reason is COVID, and the reason is, you know, this guy really is not being sensitive. And this coworker said, no, Dave, there's no excuse for how you responded. There's no excuse. And where does that anger come from? And how are you so insensitive that you rebuked him in front of everybody else? And I had to go back, and I actually spent some time in prayer and searching my heart, and I found out, wow, you know, when I get really pushed, that anger is really, really close there. And I don't have that under control. And God just took me through a process. I actually found it was tied to some idolatry in my life. Kind of the idol of being in control. When I lost control, I had to grab it again, no matter what the cost. And I was using anger to take back control, which is not good. Whew. It's painful when you see that stuff. And I really didn't want to dig deeper. I wanted to explain it by everything else. But it was so helpful to me. And I don't know if this has been true for you, but I've had a more consistent personal breakthroughs during COVID than in the 5 years preceding that, because I just kept running into stuff. Where'd that anger come from? How come I'm so filled with worry today? what is this about my leadership that I'm not empowering these people? And all those were just great opportunities to grow. So when that shock treatment comes, if you can stop and say, okay, what does the heat draw rise up in me? And how can I pay attention to that and take that to the Lord and see it as a opportunity to grow? So sometimes when that lightning comes, we're actually hearing criticism that we don't normally hear and that we need to listen to. Like if you can strip the emotion away, tell me more about what you're saying. And when we started getting lightning strikes from our congregation on the elders, their emotion wasn't great. But they were talking about problems that were really there. And so we had to step back and say, how can we actually pull out the information in that lightning strike and do something about it, which we hadn't been. Okay, here's the next one. Oil gone from community. As you increase the vitamins of love, relationships, and grace, your community can become a magnet of God's resources for dry and hurting people around you. So here's the thing, the low oil that's in your community is even more in the world around you. And so if you can give attention to raising, coming out of COVID, raising the quantity of love, grace, relationships, concern in your community, you're going to be a magnet for a lot of hurting people around you. So pour that oil in. And I think one of the big priorities coming out of COVID is doubling down on what was missing. In other words, spending more energy getting love, grace, compassion, relationships back into the system. So one of the things we've done in our church is we just realized, wow, we've been together like this, you know, and we've been talking afterwards, a lot of people online. So we decided during these months, we've canceled church once a month. Some people maybe do this twice a month. And moved it to the afternoon, and it's from 4 to about 7. It includes dinner, and there's no sermon. We hear some testimonies. We have some discussions. Somebody shares this. Somebody shares that. We stand in a big circle, kind of a double circle in this room, and sing. And we're just trying to create that living room again, that family again, the things that we're missing. And so and there's a couple people sitting up front, and there's discussion back and forth. It's in a different place, so it's even in a different kind of a room. And then sometimes we'll sit around tables. We come in and we get numbers, and the numbers tell what group you're going to be in. So there's forced mixing. So I go to 6, and now there's people, and the first thing I do is get their names, because there's people who've come that I don't know them. We haven't talked. And we basically spend 3 hours just pumping the engine with oil. And it's amazing how much different. And then we eat together. And then we hang around together. Well, we're calling it vitamin, which means vitamin. And it's like after a long winter, you gotta get some vitamin D in there. You know, you gotta take supplements to make up for the things that you're missing. And I think one of the questions we have to ask in our community is how do we double down on the things that we're missing? And maybe even strip down our program more to beef up that oil. Because if you do, you're going to be an attractive place for a lot of people who are really, really low on that oil right now. 1 Peter 4, 7 through 13 says, "The end of all things is at hand, therefore be self-controlled, sober-minded for the sake of your prayers. Above all, keep loving each other earnestly, since love covers over a multitude of sins." Hey, it'll fix a lot of problems if we just keep loving each other. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. Hey, you need to be hanging around. I think we need to be eating together. We need to be having people in our homes. We need to be having people sleep over. As each of us has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's grace. And so part of what you have to release is you also have to release the mutual service of the body again, because that's gotten stuck. Because there's only some people that can serve online and some people can serve up front. Got to get the body working again. There's this mutual care and concern, and that just takes some work and it takes some attention. So I think leadership has to double down on oil right now. Double down on those things that are in 1 Peter 4. Energy levels are depleted. When standard energy sources are depleted, there's finally motivation to find alternative sources of energy. Now we're finding this with the oil from Russia. Europe's going, it was so easy to get it from Russia. Okay, we need to build some more windmills. Or okay, we need to figure out something. This problem of an energy source being shut down forces you to look for alternative sources of energy. And these energy levels that are depleted, often we're getting our energy from maybe not the best sources. Like, we were running out, and maybe this is a great time to Isaiah 40, 30 through 31. "Even youth shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted." Okay, this is post-COVID. Boom! "But those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles." So they rise on the updraft. They rise without flapping. "They'll run and not be weary. They'll walk and not faint." So is this a great time for us to dig deeper in alternative sources of energy? Like, how do we learn to better wait on the Lord? How do we learn to deepen our connection with His energy in such a way that when youth stumble and fall, we're running, we're soaring, because we've learned to really wait on the Lord? I remember talking with someone who was involved in very difficult inner city ministry that was so demanding. And she said, "I kept thinking about how do I build boundaries so I don't lose my energy, because my well kept getting dry. I just draw and all of a sudden I'm dry." And then she says, "Well, I finally realized I could limit the flow of water, or I could deepen my well. See, if I deepen my well, I don't have to limit my water, because I've got a deeper well." So she really began to say, how do I deepen my well so that in these demands, I actually have resources of energy that I didn't have before. The well is deeper. And I would say that's a wonderful challenge for us as leaders. We come to the end of our energy and we go, okay, that's the amount of energy I have. That's the amount of energy you have from Russia. But are there alternative sources of energy? Are there other places to get energy? That's the amount of energy you currently have in your well. Are there ways to deepen your well so that you wait on the Lord in new ways and He renews your strength, and actually you're in these updrafts that you're rising in His power, and you go, wow, there were sources of energy that I didn't know about. This is awesome. Let's move on to the fifth one. What worked before? Well, change can take you back to the basics and out of maintenance mode into courageous action. So one of the things I found under COVID is you kind of get stripped back and you have to go, what's the most important thing I need to do? Because I'm going to only do a couple things. And I've seen many ministries in a good way just come back to the basics of disciple making. They couldn't do a lot of the programs, so then you just get back to the basics of disciple making, which we need to. It's like the big complicated thing stopped working. We've got to go back to the simple thing that really is the core of what we're doing anyway. So it takes us back to the basis. And it also, we've had ministries that have really doubled down on disciple making during this time and seen just tremendous fruit. But there's also courageous action, like to maybe say, okay, I was driving a car before. Let's ride bikes now. You know, let's try something different. Okay, it's a mode of transportation, but what about this? And environments like this can bring some real innovation too. It can cause us to leave something that was working and stopped working, but maybe there's something that's better that would work in its place. So like one of our guys down in Serbia, the first day of the first week of the lockdown, he started doing a 5-minute sermon online. And he started doing it every day. He's a 31-year-old, he just started preaching every day, 5 minutes online. Pretty soon he said, there's 500 people watching my online 5-minute. Well, this is cool. So he just kept doing it every day. And sometimes he just say, hey, this is what I learned in my devotions this morning. And he put a camera on. And he's an interesting guy to watch. And pretty soon there were 1,000. And then there were 2,000. And then pretty soon there were 5,000 people following it. Now this is Serbia, where there's 11,000 evangelical believers. But then there were 11,000 people following him. He's a 31-year-old pastor in a small village church. Then there were 20,000 people following him. He's been doing it every day for a year and a half now, or maybe more. Maybe it's coming up on 2 years now. He has 57,000 people following him. 57,000. And within a day of when he posts a video, it's seen by 5,000 people. Now, can think about this. How many, they talk about D.L. Moody in London preaching every day to 5,000, and we go, oh, amazing. Well, Stoica in Serbia is preaching every day to 5,000. He's been doing it for almost 2 years. That's incredible. 57,000 people. And he says sometimes he'll be walking through a city he doesn't even know in Serbia, and somebody will run up and give him a hug and say, I've been watching you. People are showing up in churches that are getting saved. It's just, he's got so many stories, just amazing things that he would have never done that if it weren't for COVID. And so think about the innovations that COVID has kind of forced and learn from them, because there's new ways, there's bicycles that we can ride. And here's one of the things that I encourage our staff to do. Here's some examples of that, by the way. So, and we're getting towards the end, is something, have you ever heard, this is called a Paternoster elevator. Paternoster, which is like the Our Father. Why is it the Our Father elevator? Well, it's because they say it's like a chain of like a rosary. It's elevators that just go in a circle. Has anybody ever used one of these? Okay, yeah, and they've got some of these in Prague. I remember the first time you go, man, I hope I don't get crushed. And so it's there's one that's going up and one that's going down, and you just wait, and then you step in that, and then it goes, and then there's the next one, and it's a pretty efficient elevator because you don't have to ever wait for it. You just wait one elevator and get in the next one. It looks a little scary. But the picture that I have for this is every time there's an up elevator, there's a down elevator, there's an up one. You know, something's going down, but something else is going up. And so sometimes the question is, how can we get off the down elevator and onto the up elevator? And we just have to step off and step on. There are things that are stopping working, but there are other things that are growing and increasing. Get off the down elevator, get on the up one. You know, just step off and go, which one? Oh, that one's going up. I'll get on that one. And that's one of the challenges opportunities of COVID, is to find some up elevators and get off some down ones. And so that's just a challenge for you. As for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. So this evil, how can it be for good that many people should be kept alive as they are today? That's Joseph. And then Psalm 29, 10, 11, the Lord sits enthroned over the flood. The Lord is enthroned as king forever. The Lord gives strength to his people. The Lord blesses his people with peace. And then thanks be to God who always leads us triumphantly as captives in Christ, and through us spreads everywhere the fragrance of the knowledge of him.